The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger, Bantam Books Incorporated, New York, New York, 1945. The type of work is a psychological journey set in New York City. The story centers on a disturbed and sensitive adolescent by the name of Holden Caulfield, his 10-year-old sister Phoebe, and his girlfriend, Sally Hayes. Unlike his high school classmates, who are already dreaming of solid careers as businessmen and professionals, Holden Caulfield had turned his soul loose to wander through quiet lands of its own. "You know that song," he would say, "if a body catch a body coming through the rye? I keep picturing all these little kids playing some game in this big field of rye and all. Thousands of little kids and nobody's around, nobody big. I mean, except me. And I'm standing on the edge of some crazy cliff. What I have to do, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over the cliff. I mean, if they're running and they don't look where they're going, I have to come out from somewhere and catch them. That's all I do all day. I'd just be the catcher in the rye and all. I know what's crazy, but that's the only thing I'd really like to be. I know what's crazy. Crazy indeed." Holden was telling a story from behind the walls of a mental hospital. In December of 1949, Holden was expelled from the Pensy Prep School for Boys. He had failed 4 out of his 5 classes, and he refused to apply himself at all to his studies. This was the 4th academy Holden had flunked out of. On the eve of his departure, Holden went to see his history teacher, Mr. Spencer, who had asked him to stop in for goodbyes. He found Mr. Spencer smelling of Vic's nose drops and wearing a ratty bathrobe that opened to reveal his bumpy old chest. Almost immediately, the old man launched into a farewell lecture. "Life is a game, boy," he declared. "Life is a game that one plays according to the rules." Yes, Holden was failing in school and in life, said Mr. Spencer, because he didn't play according to the rules. After suffering through this visit, Holden returned to his dormitory. His roommate, Stradlater, who was prepping himself for a date, asked him for a last favor. Could he come up with a descriptive essay about a house or a room for Stradlater's English assignment? Holden agreed, but after Stradlater left, he couldn't think of any house or room to write about, so he scrawled some lines about his brother's baseball mitt. "My brother Allie had this left-handed fielder's mitt." He was left-handed. The thing that was descriptive about it, though, was that he had poems written all over the fingers in the pocket, everywhere, in green ink. He wrote them on it so that he'd have something to read when he was in the field and nobody was up at bat. He's dead now. He got leukemia and died when we were up in Maine on July 18, 1946. When Stradlater returned from his date and read Holden's essay, he went crazy. "For Christ's sake, Holden," he shouted, "this is about a goddamn baseball glove. You don't do one damn thing the way you're supposed to." Now, this was the 2nd verbal assault Holden had endured that night. He struck out at Stradlater with his fist. When the much stronger Stradlater responded, Holden was left beaten. Humiliated, his nose bleeding, he gathered his things and ventured into the December night. Since Holden had not yet told his parents about his expulsion, he was not expected home for Christmas vacation until Wednesday, so he took a train to the west side of New York and checked into the Edmont Hotel. On his way up in the elevator, he was informed by the attendant, who doubled as a pimp, that for only $5 he could arrange to have a girl sent to his room. Feeling as if he were in some remote, lonesome country, Holden acquiesced. When the prostitute appeared, however, he changed his mind. He handed her the $5 and sent her away. But a few minutes later, the girl showed up at his door again, with her pimp in tow. The pimp demanded another $5. When Holden refused to pay any more, the pimp barged into the room and pummeled him. Afterward, Holden climbed into bed and pondered a while. "I felt like jumping out the window. I probably would have done it, too, if I'd been sure somebody would cover me up as soon as I landed. I didn't want a bunch of stupid rubbernecks looking at me when I was all gory." Then, after a few more dead sober thoughts about this, Holden turned over to plan what he would do for the next few days. The following morning, Holden checked out of the Edmont and called his girl, Sally Hayes, to ask her if she wanted to see a movie. "Okay," said Sally. She would meet him later that afternoon. After that, he wandered absently through the streets. Suddenly, he heard a child singing, "A body, catch a body, coming through the rye," crooned the little boy. And at that moment, at that very instant, Holden felt happy. The song reminded him of his mission, of what he always wanted to be, the catcher in the rye. Stepping cheerfully, Holden proceeded down the street to a museum, one he hadn't been to since he was a young child. There, standing once more in front of the familiar glass cases, the pleasant musty odor returning to his lungs, he noticed that everything was positioned exactly the way he remembered it. In all those years, nothing had changed. The best thing about a museum was that it always stayed the same, he thought. Certain things, they should stay the way they are. You ought to be able to stick them in one of those big glass cases and just leave them alone. I know that's impossible, but it's too bad anyway. Reluctantly, Holden exited the museum. After the movie that afternoon, Sally and Holden went ice skating. As he gazed out over the rink, Holden couldn't help but think how phony everyone was. Sally, the movie actors, the theatergoers, the skaters, all the students at his four schools, they were nothing but phonies. Practically the only people who weren't phony, he concluded, were himself, his 10-year-old sister Phoebe, and his dead brother Allie. He had let himself flunk out of school. It was all a fraud. He refused to live by Mr. Spencer's rules. After all, the rules must be phony too. But when Holden tried to share this news with Sally, she was bewildered. They argued. Finally, Holden rushed out of the ice rink, leaving Sally behind, crying. He meandered for a while, then he found a bar and got drunk. Towards the end of the evening, still at the bar, he staggered into the men's room and initiated an argument with a stranger. The man punched him until he passed out and hit the floor. When he came to, he felt an overwhelming urge to see his little sister. Not wanting his parents to know he was home already, that he'd been kicked out of his fourth school, he took a cab to his family's apartment building and crept through the dark toward Phoebe's bedroom. When he woke her up, Phoebe was overjoyed to see Holden. Their parents weren't home, she said. They wouldn't be returning until late that night. "Daddy's going to kill you," the girl erupted when Holden told her he'd been expelled. "No, that would never happen," Holden said, because he was going to move west and live in a cabin all by himself. He'd only come home to say goodbye to Phoebe. But Phoebe finally made her brother promise to stay in New York, at least until Friday, so he could see her school play. Finally, with $8.65 borrowed out of his sister's Christmas gift fund, Holden made his way out of the apartment. Unable to find a room for the night, Holden showed up at the home of one of his old teachers, Mr. Antolini. Mr. Antolini seemed happy to see him and invited him to stay the night. But then, as they drank coffee together, Antolini started in just like Mr. Spencer before him, with a lecture. Holden was headed for a big fall, he warned. Then, in a kinder voice, he advised, "You'll find that you're not the first person who was ever confused and frightened and even sickened by human behavior. You're by no means alone on that score. You'll be excited and stimulated to know. Many, many men have been just as troubled morally and spiritually as you are right now. Happily, some of them kept records of their troubles. You'll learn from them if you want. Just as someday, if you have something to offer, someone will learn something from you." Holden had suddenly grown very tired. Could he go to sleep now? Bedded down on Antolini's couch, Holden nodded off quickly. But he did not sleep long. He was awakened by a hand stroking his head. There, sitting next to him on the floor, was his teacher. Mr. Antolini was apparently making a pass. Holden got up and bolted out of the house. For the rest of the night, he sat up in a bus station. In the morning, Holden walked to Phoebe's school and asked an office attendant to deliver a note to her explaining that he couldn't wait until Friday to move west after all. He was leaving today, and he wanted Phoebe to meet him in front of the museum during her lunchtime to say goodbye. When his sister showed up at the museum 20 minutes late, she was carrying a suitcase. "I'm going with you," she announced firmly. "No, you're not," retorted Holden. Finally, after a tearful argument, brother and sister decided to spend the rest of the day in the park. Holden could not keep his eyes off Phoebe. He loved her. How idyllic, how perfect, how beautiful she was, riding around and around in the park on the carousel. When D.B., Holden's older brother, came to visit him in the mental hospital, he asked Holden what he thought about all the stuff that had happened. Holden didn't know how to respond. "If you want to know the truth," he said after a moment's thought, "I don't know what I think about it." For over 6 months, the puzzle of Holden's life had remained unresolved. Every now and then, there was talk of his being reinstated in school. The question was, could he apply himself? Could he survive? Could he catch himself? No one seemed to know. No one seemed to understand. Even Holden himself just didn't understand. Almost everyone who has weathered adolescence can, to some extent, relate to Holden Caulfield. Though the particulars of Holden's life are unique, his experience is universal. "Many, many men have been just as troubled morally and spiritually as you are right now," says Mr. Antolini. "You'll learn from them, Just as someday, if you have something to offer, someone will learn something from you. Holden, however, does not want to teach anybody anything. Instead, he wants to prevent people from having to suffer the way he has. Though he has failed in salvaging his own life, he nevertheless yearns to be the catcher in the rye, the savior who can keep innocent, playful children from falling off the cliff of adolescence, who can keep their lives as pure and unchanged as a museum exhibit. But heroic as these intentions are, Holden has burdened himself with an impossible responsibility. Eventually, every child must fall off the cliff, and there is no catcher in the rye. Holden will never be able to prevent the moment in childhood and the inevitable moments throughout life when anyone who ventures out to play in the rye field finds himself suddenly staring through an unmasked sky at the gray gods below. But perhaps, as Mr. Antolini suggests, just before he himself snatches away Holden's last slice of ground, perhaps in telling his story, Holden will be able to teach somebody else something useful about the encounter.